This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, has there ever been such a contrasting week of games for Manchester City? They played out perhaps the most boring game of the season on Sunday in a goalless draw against Arsenal before taking Aston Villa apart on Wednesday with what was maybe their most complete performance of the campaign. We'll get into the talking points from the last 7 days on this week's Blue Moon podcast, taking in the situation in the title race, Phil Foden's second hat-trick of the season, and the curious question of the team's setup and structure, both with and without Erling Haaland. The fixture list doesn't ease up between now and the end of the season too. This week to come, it's Crystal Palace on Saturday and then yet another meeting with Real Madrid in the Champions League on Tuesday. Previews of those games coming up. Plus, we're getting all musical on this week's show. Ever wondered why The Boys in Blue became such a City anthem, or why Blue Moon is the song that's associated with the club? Football historian Gary James will be revealing all later on in the programme. I'm David Mooney. With me this week is, from statcity.co.uk, Adam Carter.
Hello.
And from TNT Sports Brazil, Fred Caldeira.
Hello, hello. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you back, Fred. You two, I know, Fred, you'll have been there and you'll have seen this. So, Adam, I don't know if I assume you've seen the video going viral. But Guardiola has probably never been more sarcastic in his time at City than this week. In fact, this was the clip when he was asked about speaking to players on the pitch at full time.
I need the cameras to my ego go to sleep with incredible satisfaction. So that is the reason why. So always I try to criticize the players there and let them feel that how bad they are. And especially when Erling scores 3 goals, the compliment has to be with me, not with them. That's why I use the cameras to do it there. So my advice next time, don't film us. It will not be a problem.
There we go. That sarcasm just keeps going. I don't think he's ever been as sarcastic for as long as that in his time at City. But it got me thinking. Adam, anything you've been caught on camera doing that you wish you'd not?
Yeah, this takes me back to the 2002-03 season when ITV had the Premier League rights. I think it was called the Premiership.
The Premiership, oh yes.
Yeah, Southampton away, as the players are coming out and we're clapping them out onto the pitch. Early start Southampton away, isn't it? So I'm there, just me in the shot, yawning. Yawning, and they stayed on me for a good 10 seconds. They knew what they were doing. Obviously, I didn't know till I got home. Luckily, this was pre-social media, so no one could clip it and reuse it, but absolutely mortified when I got home that night and saw that my yawning was the premise for their pre-show highlights.
Have you still got the footage of that? You should have taken it.
I've looked for it on YouTube since, because it's undoubtedly me as well. It's only me on the shot. I can't even say it's a lookalike. So yeah, mortified.
Excellent. Fred, you're always talking to a camera whenever I see you, because you're doing videos left, right and centre. But anything like when the camera was rolling, when you wish it wasn't?
All the time. I wish I was never on camera. So all the time is an unpleasant experience. No, I have been caught yawning many, many times as well, which is not great. Especially against Arsenal last weekend.
But, oh, it deserved it, right? It's fine.
But I did, I have been caught cursing, which is not a great look. But yeah, it happens.
Excellent, excellent. Was this at a flu game?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, all the time.
Excellent. I think for me, I was going to, the one I'm surprised, and like maybe this just speaks to kind of how well both of you are behaved, but for me, the thing I was caught on camera doing that I wish I hadn't been was 40 and a 30. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Very good answer.
Genuinely, though, that is true. And I genuinely thought it was a 40. That's why I was just, I even saw the camera. It was head on, and I'm just tootling towards it at 40. And then I get a letter in the post, why are you doing 40 and a 30? Come and have a speed awareness course. Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Right. Well, like every week, this episode of the Blue Moon podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? For one, you can wash every televised City game down with delicious food and refreshing beverages. And with 900 sports pubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're within walking distance of your local Green King. Let's be honest, watching football is way better with your friends friends and family. So get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere that's worth sharing. That includes huge title showdowns, the race for European qualification, and nail-biting relegation six-pointers. And don't forget to download the Green Kings Sports app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Let's talk about this week then, because it's been, as I said in the intro, Adam, it's been a kind of week of contrasting fortunes for City. A bit of a bore draw against Arsenal, and then they quite comprehensively took Villa apart. What's your assessment of the situation at the moment? I mean, we can fairly say, we're recording this Thursday morning, it'll go out Thursday afternoon. We can fairly safely assume Liverpool are going to win on Thursday evening. So what's your view of where things are at?
Yeah, so before Liverpool's 6-0 victory over Sheffield United, it's crazy because on Sunday the world has imploded and it was all over, and I'm coming out of the Etihad after the Villa game, cloud nine, we're going to win the lot. So only City can do that to you, and it was two contrasting styles of play as well. It wasn't as if we just got over, I expected us just to get over the line against Villa. That would have been acceptable, that would have been fine, it would have been a win by any means necessary just to get the 3 points on the board. But that was like a hark to back to seasons gone by. The shackles were off, we were playing well. I know we'll detail the Villa game more shortly, but in terms of the stark contrast just being a few days after that Arsenal game where it was so cagey and both teams were just petrified of losing, it's just a typical City approach to things that we can go from such a mundane level to the heights, because Villa aren't a rubbish side. We made them look rubbish. They had a few injuries, yes, but so did we. The comparison, or the lack of comparison, between the Sunday game and the Wednesday game were massive.
Yeah,
just typical City. I'd throw at that, I guess.
Yeah, Fred, for City, when it comes to especially Arsenal, was that a good point or a bad point? Given, or is it something in between? Given when you look at the table at the moment now, there's probably one point in it between the top three, but with the game in hand.
Yeah, I think it was a bad point, to be fair, like, because it's a six-pointer, isn't it? So you're not only adding points, but you're taking points out of Arsenal. So I do think that City should have won that game, which doesn't mean that they won't win the title because of that game. But for me, it seems more like a missed opportunity. I know, I understand that Arsenal are very good. Their defense is almost impossible to go through, but City had the tools and I think they should have won.
Yeah, when you contrast it to the Villa performance, I mean, did you get the sense that there was more hunger, more fight against Villa?
I'm not sure. I think the hunger and the fight was always there. I don't think that was the difference. I think the difference was that City played better, and to be fair, Villa defensive system is not as good as Arsenal's. I agree with Adam, like, City made them look a bit more vulnerable than they usually are. But I don't know, I think that the fight and the spirit is always there. But they tend to be a bit too attached to what the theory say that they should do. I think against Arsenal, they missed the improvisation kind of thing.
Yeah. Do you think when it comes to the situation now, Adam, as well, you look at that, and I found it a bit odd that Arsenal didn't go a little bit more for the jugular on the basis that they could take control of the title race themselves in this stage. I guess they're quite happy for it to stay tight. But for City, now with no chances to directly affect Liverpool and Arsenal, it's kind of like we're in third position in this race at the moment, and you kind of it feels a little bit uncomfortable, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was bizarre. I feel like the Arsenal game, both Pep and Arteta positioned themselves in a do not lose and we'll back ourselves to get enough out of the remaining fixtures that Liverpool won't. Because a draw was no good to anyone, really, because Arsenal could have had it in their own hands if they'd have gone for it against us. I'm glad they didn't, because it would have been even more uncomfortable on Sunday than it was. And I genuinely think that Pep and Arteta are almost backing themselves to get enough thereafter. So that's even more uncomfortable for me as kind of an almost negative, pessimistic City fan, that we're almost, I hate relying on Liverpool or other teams doing us favours and Liverpool dropping points. And I always just want it in our hands. And the moment it's not in our hands in a running is the time you're saying your prayers. So it was a bizarre setup from both teams on Sunday. And I just turned to the bloke who sits next to me, like, this is no good for anyone. Like, let's step it up a bit. And it never came. And then it was almost by design again, when you think, I think after about 70, 75 minutes, we had a bit of a roll of the dice with Doku and Greeley substitutions. It didn't really change the game that dramatically. It was as if both teams have thought, right, we'll do our damage outside of this game. I think Pep was happy to get through the Liverpool and Arsenal games unbeaten, so they've not gained any ground directly against us. And then we'll take care of business like we always do. It's a risky tactic, and we'll only know if that was the right approach come the end of the season. But I genuinely do think that was in the thinking, yeah, that we'll back ourselves.
Yeah, I also wonder if it's a little bit mutually assured destruction. You know what I mean? It's like, we're not going to let you go down, even if it takes us. We're not going to let you get away with it, even if it takes us down as well. We're not letting you have it.
Yeah, but that's a new approach from both of those sides, I think. I don't think we've been that conservative in the past. It feels like that was the first time we were happy with, you know, letting someone else in on it, in on the act kind of thing. It was definitely a transition and definitely a evolution of what we used to.
Yeah, but Fred, is that kind of like a result of... is it a result of it being a three-team title race, in that there is the tighter you keep it for as long as possible, you've still got a good chance?
Yeah. Maybe sometimes it's important not to lose instead of going all in for the win. We have to remember that Liverpool and Arsenal, they still face Villa, they still face United at Old Trafford. Well, City will have to support United for a day, I guess. So I don't know. you better answer that to me. But yeah, they still face Spurs. So it's still, there is a lot to be played. So like Adam said, at the end we'll see if Pep was right or wrong to try to be more cautious against Liverpool and Arsenal.
Yeah, and as much as City swatted Villa away, Fred, it took a really good City performance to do that. It was a rotated Villa side with injuries, but they still were no mugs. And this is, I guess, this is a little bit of an unfair question since it's only one game. But is that, we always talk about City needing to click at this stage of the season? Was that the click happening, do you think?
We'll see on Saturday, and especially on Tuesday, if the post-click era has started. But yeah, that was a great sign. Like, that was the best City performance, I don't know for how long. Everything was more fluid. Everything was clicking, and everything was, I don't know, everything made sense. City was anything but boring. They looked more like the side that won the treble in the past Premier League. So, yeah, hopefully that will be the case on the following games.
Yeah. Adam, you confident as well?
If I could choose any game to have as the second game of my post-click game, it wouldn't be Palace away. That's the type of game that, regardless of what form we've been in, we've struggled at that ground. So I totally agree with Fred in terms of we'll only know if the click happened when you have another game like that. I think it did happen last night. I think the crowd were up for it. I think the switching of play was fluid. We've switched the play more than just side-to-side passing. We were trying to force things in behind with Doku and Grealish. Doku had the beating of his man most times, and we were in behind more than we have been in recent weeks. So if you're asking me on that one game snapshot, I think that's the start of something. This will age badly at 2:30 on Saturday.
You know, I don't think I've ever asked a question on the podcast and have somebody laugh at me hysterically because of how bad it was. That's the first time that's ever happened. So thank you for that. Let's talk then about some individuals, because Fred, it was Phil Foden's night against Villa. That was his first ever goal from a direct free kick. He's currently enjoying his best ever season. Adam, I went on your website and did some digging with the numbers he's now level on all-time City goals with Erling Haaland, which is really weird because obviously Haaland, one phenomenal season and a bit, and like Foden, a career, it's odd, but they're currently neck and neck. And he's one behind Yaya Toure for City, which is an incredible feat for someone who, for Toure's influence at City and for Foden's age. Like, his goal scoring is an underrated part of his time at City, I think. So when you look at the overall performance now, just how good has Foden been this last few weeks, this season, and where the trajectory is on?
Yeah, like two interesting things from last night as well. One was Foden saying that he doesn't train free kicks, and I don't know, out of the blue, he asked Alvarez, who usually takes them, to have that one, and obviously it did pay off. And afterwards, in the press conference, Pep saying that Foden has a special talent on scoring goals. So if that was underrated, now Pep said for the world to listen. So it's interesting to see what Foden can become in that sense. Like if you can compare with Jude Bellingham, which is obviously a goal scorer for Real Madrid and could be for England, they might be compete for the same position now if Gareth Southgate is clever enough to read what Foden has been doing for City. I don't know, like Foden's story is just the dream of every boy and girl that support their club, isn't it? Like you become the local hero, and I love to see that his patience paid off. Like Sancho decided to leave and he decided to stay, and now we're seeing what we're seeing.
Yeah, I will pick you up on one thing though, Fred. It wasn't a great free kick, was it? It did get a little bit of a helping hand there.
Oh yeah. From the, how do you say, the guy that was there standing in front of him. Yeah, that was a bit of a helping. You won't complain.
Yeah, it was my favourite Dale Winton and Anton Dubek vehicle, Adam, hole in the wall that I was channeling last night. I did that tweet, and everybody, like, it got like a modest number of likes, and I thought that was really. I've been waiting for weeks to do something like that next time that happened.
Yeah, it was a perfect ball shaped hole, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, and he found it entirely brilliantly. Here's another kind of difficult question, and perhaps a little unfair one, but when you consider that, you think back to Anfield, Kevin De Bruyne comes off and he has that little kind of head-to-head with Pep on the touchline. A few weeks later, they play Arsenal and it's Foden that comes off and De Bruyne stays on. And then you get to last night, and I know they're obviously managing De Bruyne's injury and his minutes and making sure that he's kind of not going to do himself a mischief on his return. But at the same time, it's Foden that starts the game. Foden finishes the game. Well, doesn't finish the game, but De Bruyne doesn't come on. And you look at the impact he's had there. Are we starting to witness this as the change around between the player that City built the team around, from De Bruyne to Foden?
Yeah, I think you can expand it a bit further back through the season when De Bruyne was out. It was between Alvarez and Foden, who stepped up into that middle central number 10 role, if you like. And so I think it goes further than just last night. I think last night just elevated his status again. Another hat trick through the middle, pulling the strings. I think it's a weird one with Foden, because I was guilty of, I love Foden, obviously he's one of our own, so I put all my hopes and dreams on him because he's me running around in a City shirt, albeit a lot better at football than I am. But I think Foden, I was guilty last night of, in the early parts of the game, Foden was caught ball watching, lacking, and sounds ridiculous because he's the best player in the world. But it was a bit subdued against Arsenal as well, but I think everyone was. But then in the second half of games, he just comes alive and runs the show. I'm thinking Everton away in the early part of the season. I got slated for saying on Twitter that he had a quiet first half and he was amazing the second half. So I think Foden, once he can knit the entire game together, I think there's no stopping him, and he is on Bellingham levels and he's in world-class territory on the... But so I feel stupid criticising anything Foden does, because then he pulls that out of the bag and drags us, not only us, but our goal difference up by three, drags us across the line against a very good Villa side in a time where it was a tough game to go into last night, and he was the difference. So he's already ticking those boxes. I just think doing it over 90 minutes is his next, and then he is just the ultimate for me. So I've got no qualms with him taking the mantle over De Bruyne. I think he's shown in glimpses this season that that's the way it should be going. But whilst we've got De Bruyne, we'd need to try and shoehorn them both into the side, just because you're daft having De Bruyne in your squad and him sitting on the bench, because that just doesn't seem right, even though you've got the mercurial talents of Foden as well. So yeah, it's a tough one for Pep, but a nice problem to have.
I wonder if the answer is really quite simple there, Fred, because we've seen how good that Foden is across the front three. He can play on the right, can play on the left, can play through the centre. De Bruyne is so much more impactful in the centre. So like Foden just plays wide until De Bruyne is gone.
I believe so. But that sometimes can look like a waste. Yeah. It? Like when De Bruyne is having an off day and you see Foden barely touching the ball or just hugging the touchline and passing the ball backwards. It's like, why you're not going down the middle? Sometimes, to be fair, they do switch. Like, you can see sometimes Foden going to the right and Foden to the middle. For De Bruyne loves to get the curvy crosses, and they are so effective sometimes. So, I don't know. Pep said that they can play together through the middle. I'm still curious to see it.
Yeah, there's another player that I want to come to as well, Fred, because up until Foden scored his third, I was still in the camp of Rico Lewis is absolutely going to be my man of the match. And then as soon as Foden gets that third one, especially in the circumstances where he's fouled, doesn't get the free kick and then goes, all right, well, I'll just belt it in from here then, doesn't matter. That kind of elevated him to man of the match level. But Rico Lewis, he didn't just come in and play well. He was an absolutely key member of what City wanted to do, wasn't he?
He was. And I wonder why we have to have, like, 300 injuries for him to have more game time. And I don't know, maybe something without possession that keeps him away from Akanji. But with the possession and doing the John Stones role, he's so much better than Akanji. It's so much more natural for him than to Manuel. And I like Manuel, and we'll talk about him closely in the show. But yeah, Rico Lewis was really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because you talk about Akanji there, and like Akanji's the one with the experience, and you look at the performance that Lewis put in, Fred, and it was like he was the most experienced player on the pitch apart from Rodri.
Yeah, absolutely relaxed on the ball, and I don't know, connecting the lines and being that in between the lines kind of guy in the pockets and blah blah blah. Like, yeah, he's so comfortable, and that is the impression that he gave me last time, 300 years ago, when he was having a sequence of games in a City shirt. So yeah, hopefully that's going to happen again. But yeah, he deserves to be on the, I don't know, top three, top four players on the pitch last night.
Yeah, it says a lot, doesn't it, Adam, that Guardiola had him doing the role in the middle and not giving it to Akanji. Akanji's done it before. I don't think Akanji's as bad at it as people make out. He's clearly not Stones, and at the moment, clearly not Lewis. But I think Akanji is capable of doing it. And it's quite interesting that he went, no, Rico's going to do this.
Mm. Yeah, I think Rico passes the eye test better in terms of, it seems that he goes into those positions where he's breaking the lines and finds himself in those pockets to receive and turn with the ball.
I just remember his turn on the edge of the box, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's against Arsenal as well. I was going to say how good it is that Pep trusts Lewis, but actually Fred makes a good point there. It does seem to actually be the injuries that are forced Lewis into the team rather than him being chosen, so it's almost by default. So it'll be interesting to see if he keeps that position in the running now, because I don't know still if he's Pep's ultimate choice if everyone's fit, even though when he's come in, he can be relied on. He's never put a foot wrong, really. And again, I'll put my City fan hat on and see that a local lad who's come through the academy is doing things on that stage to that level. I'm always going to elevate his kind of status in my reading of the game just because of the emotional attachment that we have to these type of players. So it's going to be interesting now to see whether Pep trusts him based on his performances or the level of injuries in the squad, whether he comes in or not. I can't see him having a prolonged run in the team. I think he'll be in and out, even though I'd love to have him in there. He's not had the big acid test, really, has he? Although he came in and Arsenal did great. So there's your first proper test passed. He showed Stones how to do the role last year. And then when Stones was in the routine, Lewis never really got back in that position. If Stones is fit, if everyone's fit, does Lewis come in? And I'm probably doing your job in asking you the question rather than answering it there. But I probably lean on the side of no, even though I would personally.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Foden. We talked about Foden. You mentioned kind of like the context of that with Lewis and the homegrownness of it all. Mm. And then when you look at like the season that Oscar Bob's had, okay, he's not really been that involved recently, but he's made an impact this year. You kind of look at kind of all that criticism the academy had over in previous years about not getting anybody into the team, and you look at where they could be in the next couple of seasons.
Oh, It was great. I was thinking how many boyhood City fans were on the pitch last night. I'm very romantic when it comes to stuff like that, so I always cling to those kind of stats and keep an eye on that type of thing. So it's just all coming to fruition now. We were criticised of just having a conveyor belt that just churns money. Business, the football clubs are run as businesses now. You need that profit from players that might not make the grade, but they're pure profit in a sale. But also, we're not just using it as a conveyor belt now. There's a clear pathway, and we always promised that that was going to be the outcome, and now it's coming to fruition. It's just an extra bonus and makes it all the sweeter when you see local lads doing things like that last night. So, and that's only going to have a good knock-on effect, because the lads in the academy now can see that there is that clear pathway, and it's not just we'll churn you out and discard you as soon as you're not good enough. So always here for it, here for it.
Yeah, and just quickly, Fred, as well, on Lewis, where do you see Walker's involvement for the remainder of the season? Because he's not, I think it's fair to say, he's not had his best season. City moved heaven and earth to keep him last summer, and then you've got Lewis coming in playing as well as he is.
I know. It's a question mark, but surely if he's fit enough, he will play. It's curious to see that maybe the problem with Lewis is that he's too small, and Pep is starting to love the big, bulky guys, and he won the Champions League with four of those. So I don't know. Maybe that answer will be answered. Maybe that question will be answered next season. I think for the remaining of the season, if Walker's fit, he will be starting.
Straight back in there, yeah. Think of some dynamic teammates who got it done. City have had some great partnerships down the years, whether it's De Bruyne and Haaland, Dunn and Distan, or Rosler and Walsh. But what about the perfect teammates when it comes to growing your business? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/bluemoon. That's all in lowercase. Go to shopify.com/bluemoon to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/bluemoon.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast.
Let's finish the first part of the show with, I mean, possibly one of the naughtiest kind of discussion points that I've come up with. Because Fred, no De Bruyne, no Haaland. We've talked about Foden and kind of the impact on the squad there. Not really talked about Alvarez, but when you look at Alvarez in the team against Villa and the setup that City had, no De Bruyne, no Haaland, and suddenly it looks a lot more fluid. Is that 2 + 2 = 5?
Kind of thing. I'm very, very, very cautious to jump onto, well, if City played well against without Haaland, this is it. This is the key. I think Haaland is still part of the answer. He's still part of the solution, not part of the problem. And if you have a goal scorer with a knack of scoring like he has, you should make him have opportunities. And if in the beginning of the season, the problem was he was having that opportunities, but he wasn't scoring enough. He was missing sitters. Now he hasn't been having those opportunities. So I don't know. It is yin yang kind of thing. And to be fair, I didn't like Alvarez last night.
Fair enough. I think the other side of this, Adam, as well, is you can't read too much into one game. And, you know, previously I'd have probably said that City's most fluid display was Brentford away, and Haaland played 80-odd minutes in that. So it's like you certainly can't read into not having Haaland there being the reason. But The structure and the shape of it's an easier question to solve when he's not there, isn't it?
Yeah, and another example I want to throw into the mix is Luton away. Yes, it was a cup tie, so they're going to be less defensive than usual. But he played, obviously, well in that, scored five.
Scored five.
Yeah, exactly. But I think teams are more likely to play defensive when Haaland's in our side. Therefore, there's less space. Therefore, he's up against tougher opponents in a defensive standpoint. So I'd always want Haaland in the side. I'm never going to say we're better without him. I will say that Pep's systems are better without him. Pep's football is suited to having false tens, smaller strikers, diminutive strikers who can, you know, lend something to midfield and having extra bodies there. It's no secret that he wants extra bodies in midfield. He wants the extra pass. He wants to strangle the opposition. And Haaland doesn't give you that because he's so direct, and his strengths come when there's space in behind that he can run onto, and that he can extend that ridiculously long leg and just pull something out at the back post. And whilst Haaland's on the pitch, you're always got a chance of a goal. So I would never say I wouldn't want Haaland playing. I just think it's a clash of styles that, weirdly, winning a treble and second season on, we're still trying to iron out. That's not a bad problem to have if you're winning trebles and a couple of points off top spot with nine games to go and in semi-finals of FA Cups and quarterfinals of Champions Leagues, and you're still trying to work out your best way of playing. I'll take that all day long.
Yeah, you're probably doing all right. I do wonder, Fred, if it kind of just points to the fact that Haaland has been in patchy form recently. If the fact that this discussion exists just means, well, Haaland hasn't been taking his chances, so everybody looks at it and goes, well, he's not playing very well. They need to find a way to get the ball to him better.
Yeah, because the only way to analyze Haaland's game nowadays is if he's scoring, if he's not, because apparently his general play is League Two player kind of style. But I think it's a good problem when you have two styles. Like, you can try to break into different defensive styles with two different offensive styles. So Pep has that in his pocket, but I'm not sure if a game is too hard, he will take Haaland off. He'll sub Haaland off. But yeah, we'll see against... I think Real Madrid is going to be a great one to see what's what.
Yeah. What was your read on the fact that he wasn't selected, for Fred? Rest or kind of moved out for form?
I think rest, but a welcomed rest within a patchy form.
Yeah. Right, well, we'll talk about Real Madrid and Palace shortly. But first, we've had a fair few questions submitted to the podcast in the last few months about City's songs, whether that's official songs that have been recorded or chants from the fans. Before the international break, I met up with the football historian Gary James to ask him about a raft of City-related tunes. We started by discussing the origins of the Boys in Blue.
Back in the early 70s, teams used to produce, like, club songs quite often. People always associate them with, like, a FA Cup final or whatever, and that did happen. But there's also this spell where, for whatever reason, clubs decided, let's just release songs. And City had about three or four that they did in the early 70s. There's also Una Paloma Blanca version of that, which was silly. But anyway, they did quite a few. And The Boys in Blue just then happened to be one of these songs. I don't think when they recorded it, they expected it to be... to last as long as it did. I think they expected it to be the sort of anthem for a season, and that was it. But it ended up lasting. And
it's still here now.
Yeah, I think part of the reason is it's actually quite a good song. For a football club song, it's quite a good song. And they, you know, the North West Film Archive have the film of them actually recording it as well, which adds to it, because you actually see, you know, Frenelly and Mike Doyle and the others singing along.
Quite reluctantly.
Yeah, very reluctantly. I mean, that's the interesting thing, because you've got 10cc sort of trying to get everyone excited and whip him up, and you've got Mike Doyle sort of pulling a face, and then sort of, I think Randy Marsh sort of slaps Francis Lee on the back or something like that, and you can see all these things going on, and you think, yeah, they didn't really want to be there. But it's lasted, and I think it sort of caught the mood, because this was sort of the greatest City team, if you like, or the tail end of that great sort of late 60s, early 70s team. And, you know, they have that line, maybe in another generation. And they have the other line about if we're playing at Main Road or a million miles away. And nowadays, that all fits perfectly. But for years, I remember they'd play it, you know, as the team came out in the sort of 80s or whatever, and you'd be thinking, oh God, when's the next generation going to come, and all of that. You know, it was a bit like that. But yeah, it's just it meant something to all of us.
How did 10cc become involved? Because they're quite obviously not football fans. And in fact, there's a moment in the Northwest Film Archive. Was it Lol Cream who says, you know, I don't really like football. No.
Yeah. I mean, he was asked about, are you a football fan? He goes, no, not really. And you sort of think, you're there with the first team squad of Manchester City. You just say something like, well, I've been following what City have achieved. Or you'd say something, wouldn't you? But at least he's honest.
Just so matter of fact, yeah.
Do you know what? I mean, obviously, Manchester band and all of that. I would love to know the connection. I would absolutely love to know. I don't really know why it was 10cc. But what I do know is, all of 10cc were involved, even though, you know, on the sort of record it says, I think it's just Godley and Cream, basically, that he talks about. Maybe, I don't know. But it was all of 10cc. And the sort of recording shows them all. But it's this clash. You know, nowadays we talk about sort of footballers as being the equivalent of rock stars. But there, you can sort of see there's a bit of a rock star in 10cc, certainly in Cream, if you like. And the City players are more sort of down-to-earth Mancunians in some ways. So there's a bit of a clash there. But, yeah, I think, I don't think 10cc ever really talk about doing it. It never made it onto like a greatest hits or anything like that.
No, not quite.
And I don't think it was released as 10cc. I don't think the wider public ever knew that, really. It's just that City fans knew that. We worked it out. And I think it's probably their most enduring song in many ways.
Yeah, and of a little podcast note as well, it was done at Strawberry Studios. We recorded at Strawberry Studios the podcast for about 5 or 6 years up until about 2016 or so. So it's a nice little connection there.
Yeah, and a classic venue as well. And I think you first interviewed me there, thinking about it, you know, years ago. But yeah, Strawberry Studios itself is a classic venue, a classic place where lots of great music has been recorded over the decades, and I think that adds something else to it, doesn't it?
A little bit of extra. Let's talk about Blue Moon as well, because that is the city anthem. It's still, you know, you still hear it to this day. Why did Blue Moon take off as a city anthem?
Well, I think it's partly just because it's got the word blue in there. Right? A Crewe was singing it before City. We know that Crewe fans were singing it. And the first time I ever remember it being sung was the first day of the 89-90 season away at Anfield. And I remember, you know, we're there at the end of the game, City fans locked in, and there's a couple of guys who just started singing it in a sort of melancholy sort of way. It was Blue Moon. And it just, you know, it just sort of took off a little bit with people, but not really. And then the next game, again, a few people were singing it. But within weeks, it suddenly became this anthem. And it sort of coincided with other clubs adopting more sort of popular culture type of music. So, you know, United started singing Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. Stoke started singing Delilah. And there's other teams that started to latch onto songs like that. And that in itself became a bit of a thing. But Blue Moon, I think it was, there's something that resonated about the words, You Saw Me Standing Alone, and Blue Moon and all of that. But what I do find funny now is occasionally you'll pick up a book or you'll hear somebody talking about, say, the 76 League Cup final or whatever, and they claim that the fans were belting out Blue Moon. No, they weren't. We didn't sing Blue Moon until the late 80s. And as I say, the first time I heard it was 89-90. There are people who said, oh, it was when Al Kendall became manager. But it wasn't. It was definitely sung from the start of the 89-90 season. And I don't know, again, it's something that resonated and something that meant a great deal. And I know, and you know this, so when it was first sort of sung in a really sort of important moment, when the club's getting promoted or when the club's winning a trophy maybe these days, the passion of that is greater than any other album, anthem that we can sing. It really does, you do feel it.
Yeah.
And it matters. And it was, I was going to say it was unique to us. It was unique to us and Crewe, so it's not unique, is it? But, you know, it was unique for a Premier League club, or a top flight club, to have an anthem like that.
I mean, it's funny that you talk about it in that sense, because you think of You Never Walk Alone, for instance, as a Liverpool anthem. But it's not necessarily.
Oh, don't get me started on You'll Never Walk Alone. We all sang You'll Never Walk Alone. It was actually something that's associated with success. And as much as it pains me to say this today, during the 70s and 80s, Liverpool were the most successful club. And so Liverpool fans were singing it more. Now, they will say they sang it first. And all this. That doesn't seem to be true. I did some research a few years back, and actually United fans probably sang it first in 1958.
That'll go down well.
I know. Well, what happened was in 58, there wasn't the charts in the way that the later was for charts. There was a number of rival music charts, and there was a... Oh, God, I can't remember his name now. It might be Gene Vincent, but there was a singer who released a version of You'll Never Walk Alone in 58. And that sort of coincided with the Munich air crash. And in the weeks that followed Munich, United fans claimed they sang it. And the band that would appear at City and at United apparently played it a few times as well. So I do believe that. I do believe it was sung by United fans first, but we all sang it. In the 60s, Jerry and the Pacemakers did a version, and that became popular. So that's why it gets connected with Liverpool. And there's a story that Bill Shankly specifically asked them to do that. I'm not certain that's entirely true, but there are stories about that. But certainly, we were singing it. So there's 1969 FA Cup homecoming, where there's a film of City fans singing it. And then for me, and then they did it again in, I think it was 70, when we won the Cupman's Cup. But the most powerful version that I've seen is 76, League Cup final, which again, the North West Film Archive a film of that. And Albert Square is full of City fans, and it's either Peter Swales or Tony Book is just about to say something to everyone, and he stops because they're singing You'll Never Walk Alone, scarves up in the way that you expect it to be sung on the Kop. Exactly, it's the same sort of way by City fans, and it really passionate. And I remember as a kid being on the Kippax and in the North Stand and Platt Lane Stand, and You'll Never Walk Alone was just something we sang. Gradually it became adapted, and you know, if somebody started to sing it by about 84, people would start, if somebody started singing You'll Never Walk Alone, City fans would then start chanting Dirty Scouse Song, Dirty Scouse Song, Dirty Scouse, and that would stop it. There were also other versions, You'll Never Work Again, You'll Never Walk Again, you know all those sort of things, but the bottom line is it was an anthem we all sang.
It was a football anthem.
And you know, a bit like, we don't sing it in the same sort of way now, but the sort of traditional, you know, Abide With Me, those sort of songs, it was the same sort of feeling. And now, of course, and maybe we should start singing it again, but now it's basically your Liverpool song.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of other City kind of songs and chants that are unique to City. I mean, there's a few stories around We're Not Really Here. I always assumed this was, for some reason, this was attached to that Millwall game in about 2001 where City fans were banned. And then I went back and watched the promotion game at Blackburn a couple of years before that, and when Paul Dickoff scores, makes it 4-1, it's belted out from I was going to say the away end, but it's the whole ground by that stage with where the City fans are. So, like, what are the stories behind that?
Well, there's a number of stories. Don Price from Prestwich is probably the one who's most able to talk about this, because he says that there was a funeral for a member of the Prestwich and Whitefield Supporters Club, and at that funeral they started to sing again. And there's a longer version than what we started to sing. So he talks about that and how they were all City fans and how it sort of caught on. There's a story about City being on tour in Ireland and something happening in a bar, and City fans started to sort of say, we're not really here, as if, you know, they were nothing to do with it. I think the Prestwich and Whitefield one is probably the most accurate version. And for me, when did it take off? It's definitely around about, I'd say it's 97, 98, because when I did one of my books, Manchester Greatest City, there's a chapter which covers that sort of period, and I use it as part of the title for a chapter. So when I wrote that version, which would be probably the 2002 version, maybe I'm talking about 97, and that's why I've given it that name. So it must have been around that sort of time.
And it kind of coincides with the badness on the pitch.
It coincides with a lot of that sort of stuff, and it does coincide with the failings of City. But I don't think it's directly linked to a specific game or a specific moment for football. like I say, there's the Prestwich and Whitefield story, which I think is probably most accurate, but it does fit with that period. It sort of sums up that period. It's like, it's not the disbelief that we're in this third tier, if you like. It's the general feeling, of around the club, I think. But it became, again, that became an anthem, didn't it? You know, and one that we still sing.
Yeah, and it's kind of related to that as well. We have, it's not used anymore because of obviously City's successes, but there was, for a time when City were trophyless, United had a banner that they were counting the years where City hadn't won anything. And in response, City fans would sing however many years it was, and "We're still here." What's the earliest that was like? Because obviously, like, three years, "We're still here" doesn't make any sense.
No,
but...
No. I vividly remember 17 years, right? And the thing that happened was, I remember being at Old Trafford and United fans were singing, "City's our name, City's our name, 17 years and one, F all, City's our name." So they started that song giving us abuse. And we did the typical City thing of twisting it round and sort of changing the words slightly, but making it about loyalty.
Taking ownership,
making it about loyalty, making it about stuff. I have a feeling I remember them singing 13 years. When would that have been then? So it's 89, 90. I have a feeling I remember them singing 30, United fans singing 13 years, and our response came at some point. And years ago when I interviewed Peter Swales, start of 1995, one of the questions to Peter Swales was, "When did you realise you'd failed as a chairman?" Which was a bit of a silly question to ask, but anyway, he answered it. And he said, when he was sat at Old Trafford and the United fans were singing 17 years and one F all. And so that is 93, actually, isn't it? 93. So I think it was around that time that we twisted it. Because we had to be playing in the same division, and it's before we got relegated, so it's got to be early 90s that we took ownership of it and started to use it. And I think it's a brilliant one. I think it's a brilliant one that sort of shows a bit of our humour as well, to some extent.
And I mean, there's a couple of other kind of songs that I associate these with Main Road and not the Etihad, and I it feels like they've kind of died away. And you think of things like "We Love You City, We Do." You don't hear that anymore. There's like "The Only Football Team to Come from Manchester." You never hear that anymore. Yeah. And it's kind of like that. In my mind's eye, in my mind's ear, I hear them at Main Road.
Yeah, they are Main Road songs. I mean, "The Only Football Team to Come from Manchester," that was our badge of honour. The only football team to come from Manchester. So you can pretend you're this, you can pretend you're that, you can win whatever you win, you can be the world's greatest club or whatever you aim to be, but we're Manchester. We're the only team to come from Manchester. And maybe we should sing that. We should sing that again, because I used to love singing that. I remember being in the paddock in front of K-Stand at Old Trafford, stood up chanting that. And I'm sure a lot of United fans were going, "Show what, mate? Call blimey," and all that. You know, but I didn't care. But for us, that mattered. Manchester. And I remember 86, we got a 2-2 draw at Old Trafford, March 86, the day before we played the Four Members Cup final, and that song belted out, absolutely belted out. And Billy McNeil had picked a City team that was basically Mancunian, or had come through the youth system. The only Mancunian on the United team was Peter Barnes, ex-City player, right? So he made this big point about saying it was Manchester versus United, right? And that song absolutely belted out of Old Trafford Day when we drew 2-2, but it was like a victory, a moral victory. There's all those other songs like, you know, "We Love You City," and there's older ones. We've got an M, an A, an N, a C, I, T, Y. I can't remember. It's one that used to belt out from the main stand rarely, you know, on rare occasions, but it used to. And there's loads of those songs over the years that we've created or we've used that just fade. And if you think, in recent years, we've had some absolutely fantastic chants that have developed. But there's a long period, 80s, 90s, where we weren't as inventive as perhaps we are today, or as we've been previously. So maybe it's tied in with success on the pitch or something, I don't know. But in the 80s and 90s, if we signed a player, maybe, you know, we'd sing "One Terry Phelan," there's only one. the usual bog standard stuff. But now we have anthems again that have been created, and I love that. There was also, I'm going right back to when I was, you know, first going to games and so on. In the 70s, a television advert would quite often spark a chant at City. There was an advert for British Airways, and it was something like, "We'll take more care of you," or something. "Fly the flag," that was it. "We'll take more care of you, fly the flag." And City fans adapted that, and I'm going to struggle to remember the exact words now, but it was about Man City, Man City. "We'll take more care of you, Man City," or something like that.
Yeah, and there's one I want to finish on that is a personal bugbear of mine that never felt more like singing the blues, because City win, United lose. Like that, there's very specific circumstances which that can be sung, and it gets used far too liberally for my liking these days. For when United haven't even played yet, City are winning but United haven't played, or United have drawn earlier in the day or something like that, and City are currently winning. It's like, no, the song itself explains when you can use it.
Calm down. I share that view. It has to be reserved for those moments when United have obviously lost or are losing, and let's, you know, 5 minutes to go and they're losing and we're winning, So, you know, it's like we should draw a Venn diagram of when it can be
used.
When it can be used and when it can't be used. Because it matters that. It absolutely matters. I used to also, in the 80s and 90s, when we'd start singing that, I'd be like, shush, shush, shush.
We haven't won yet.
Yeah. And it was typically, I think there was a derby match. We were winning, was it 3-1 or whatever? And we started singing it, and it ended up a 3-all draw. And no, that's why we don't sing it until the exact moment when we can sing it. There was another song that we used to sing quite often in the 80s and 90s, which was, "We'll be top at 5 o'clock. You know, we'd win a game, which would put us top of the old second division or whatever, second tier. Or occasionally top of the top flight, the first division, Premier League, whatever. And it was, "We'll be top at 5 o'clock. We'd be winning 1-0 away. We'll be top." And I used to be like, no, wait until 5 o'clock. Let's not sing it until five.
But of course, games have moved now, so you can't. They're never played at the right time for that anymore.
Well, nowadays, you could probably sing "We'll be top at 12 o'clock or whatever. You know, you can probably sing it.
"We'll be top at 8:30. Yeah.
"We'll be top." Yeah. But it is one of those things that probably five or six teams could sing this on the first day of a season, couldn't they? You know, the team that plays on a Saturday morning, Saturday lunchtime, you know, all those sort of things. You could all sing it, but those ones that are predicting a result are always the ones that worry me most. Mm-hmm. Even now, it's like, don't think about going to Wembley until we've won this game and we are going to Wembley. You know, let's not pack our bags, let's do that. Because we know what football's like.
Yeah, and tempting fate.
I love the fact we still sing the Istanbul song, you know, about going to Istanbul and all that. Because one thing that people always say, I remember somebody saying this a few years back, "Are we still allowed to sing about Pablo Zabaleta? He's gone, right?" Yes, of course we are, because for decades we've sung about Colin Bell, so why can't we sing about, you know, for decades we sang about Joe Mercer Kane, we played the game, and so of course we can, because we're marking a moment in time. So the Istanbul song can be sung 50 years from now, because it marks that moment, and I hope it is, because it, you know, we want every generation to remember what we're doing now as well as what we've done in the past. And that's the beauty of songs. They remind you of a time and a place, just like, you know, something that was sung in the 80s at Main Road is important to us because we remember that moment, and maybe we continue those songs.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Gary James talking to me about some City songs. Now then, it's time to look ahead to Palace and Real Madrid. Fred, what shape are City in for this week now, given, again, we talked about the 0-0 draw against Arsenal and things not really being too fluid, things being very fluid against Villa. They've got Palace, which Adam has already said is tricky, and then Real Madrid is probably the trickiest tie you can have all season.
I think against Palace is the type of game that you have to win, playing well or not. Like, you have to take the 3 points home. And against Real Madrid, you have to survive Bernabeu. So probably, I don't think they are the fixtures that we should expect City to be, I don't know, fluid and smooth and, I don't know, playing the best football in the world. They just have to take 3 points from Palace, and I think a point in Spain would be very, very welcomed.
Yeah, let's make you even more nervous than you are normally, Adam, because Palace they've beaten two teams in the calendar year 2024, Sheffield United, who are bottom, and Burnley, who are second bottom. Both are the only times as well that Palace have scored more than once in a game in 2024. So it's a walkover, isn't it? Easily. Oh.
That's just exactly the game you don't want. We should have enough in the tank. If you win in leagues, you've got to be beating those.
Can I? The game you don't want. I mean, what are you talking about? There are teams that can't score goals against teams that are not at the bottom of the table.
Exactly. You've just answered your own question, David.
So what you're saying is you don't want any game. You don't want a team that's struggling, but you certainly don't want a team that's in form.
I want a mid-table team who are on the beach at home. That's what I for till now until the end of the season.
With eight games to play, good luck on that one, mate.
You've answered your own question there. You know exactly what you're doing there. We struggle there. We should have enough. I think I'm backing us to have enough, but it won't be easy. It doesn't necessarily need to be easy. It's not going to be nice. It's like this is one of the games where people say it's like going to the dentist. We know exactly what constitutes going to the dentist in football terms. You're nervy, you're edgy. It's 90 minutes of discomfort, but you should have enough to cope with your teeth being ripped out after it. So
that's a bleak image.
I know, exactly. I can't wait for the AI generated one of that. Pep having all his teeth removed. I just think we're wily enough and we've been around the block enough to know what needs to happen for us to come out of that game with enough points on the table, which is obviously the 3 points. They've got a new manager bounce, so I'm wary of that. They've got fast players that can exploit us if we concede possession, but I think that's going to be the key. The longer we've got the ball, and this is really a boring answer, the less they can do with it, obviously, because we'll have it. One goal should be enough because they don't score multiple goals. Again, cut this out when their second one goes in after 10 minutes. But yeah, it's just not going to be enjoyable. This is be the case of 3 points, move on. Don't worry about any style, substance, anything, just get the job done. I back us to do it though, but it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah. Palace, Fred, have tripped City up a fair few times in recent history, especially Pep City as well. I mean, are there any lessons you can take from earlier in the season, given that, I mean, City were absolutely cruising in that game and suddenly drew it 2-2?
Well, you can see that Foden has learned his lesson, hasn't he? Like, he's never done that anymore. And yeah, fair enough. He's a young lad and he will make mistakes. But it's curious that City tend to go better against Palace away than at home. So last season, if I'm not mistaken, was a Haaland penalty at the end of the match that decided the 1-0. But City dominated that game, so they should win anyway. I expect the same kind of style.
I've just remembered the absolute stones on Haaland with that penalty, Fred, because he said that the City asked him afterwards, what were you thinking about before it? And he was like, how I'm going to celebrate. And I'm like, whoa, come on, pal. That's confidence. That is confidence. Why will this year be different at Selhurst Park, Adam? Why will City find it easier than they have done normally? Give us a reason why.
You're the wrong person to ask for that one. I think the context is adding a lot more to it now, in that it's a must-win game, it's a cup final, and you back the better team to turn up in a cup final. And when we know what needs to be done, it's not an October fixture, it's not an early season fixture when you can still be, you've got chances to pull it back. It's do or die now, and I'd back us being a superior team, knowing what we need to do, been there, done it, got the T-shirt. I'm expecting us to be wearing that T-shirt on the dinner time kickoff, and we'll do it.
Yeah.
That's why.
Then it comes to Real Madrid, Fred. Arsenal and Villa both tried to play on the counter. Like I said before, I was a little bit more surprised at Arsenal doing that than Villa. Palace will probably do that as well. But what do you expect from Real Madrid in terms of a challenge? Because they're a team that you would expect would actually want more of the ball than these teams.
You would. But you know that Ancelotti can play in 700 different ways, and it's very hard to try to read Madrid. Like the last year match at Bernabeu was an interesting one because City tried to dominate, and every time the Real Madrid got the possession, they looked dangerous. But it was a textbook game from City of how you control Real Madrid in their own home. Even after Vinicius scored that screamer, City maintained composure and they could get a draw with a great goal from Kevin. I don't know. I still think that City will have more possession than Madrid, but that team in the counter with Rodrigo, Vinicius, without a number nine, which is a new thing for them this season. Well, in the past, I don't know, since I can remember, Real Madrid attacked with three players and the number nine, and now they don't have a number nine, and they have Jude Bellingham. So it's going to be a different Real Madrid from what City's used to, but still chameleon kind of team.
Yeah, are City capable of the same sort of performance as they put in last year, do you think, Fred?
I think so. I think, and they should. They should try to, I don't know, rip the ball apart and, okay, we're not playing beautiful football today. We're just trying to annoy you guys. You're not going to kill us here and we'll see you in Manchester.
Yeah, same sort of thing as last year in that regard. It was like a bit rope-a-dope last year, wasn't it? We don't want to let you get away, but then at the same time, you'll be a bit more confident for that trip to Manchester and, oh boy, we're going to turn it on there. Adam, for City and their league situation, all of the league games are important at the moment because City are by no means, they might be the third horse in the race at the moment for the title, but they are by no means out of this title race, given the tightness of it all. On the flip side, Real Madrid are 8 points clear in the Liga with eight to play. Does that give them a little bit more leeway?
Yeah, and I think they've got about 6 weeks between the games and for the second leg as well, so they'll certainly be well rested. You could argue that momentum and playing every 3 days gives you that rhythm. Pep uses that as an advantage and disadvantage because he complains about fixtures but loves players getting minutes and being in the rhythm, as he says. So you could caveat it with, would you rather have rhythm or rest? I think because we're going in all across three competitions, we can't afford to rest or drop players and pick and choose their minutes and games, whereas Madrid are going to have that luxury. I think on the night, though, it will just come down to who concentrates the most at the Bernabeu. And I think hopefully the number of games we've had in and around that game doesn't take a mental toll on that kind of concentration, because it's going to be a chess match at their place. I've got no concerns about that in terms of how we'll set up and how the application will take to that game. But you've got to think that they're going to be fresher mentally and physically just by the sheer lack of games around that that they'll have. So it will be a factor, but you'd hope we can rise above that.
Yeah. Now, here's a potentially tricky question, Fred. Because they're obviously going to come back in, but when do De Bruyne and Haaland come back in? Because they could be so crucial for Madrid and kind of needing the rhythm and the minutes ahead of it with Palace. But at the same time, you know, De Bruyne is coming back from injury. Haaland is, you know, he needs to find some of his form back. Is it just a case of chuck them straight back in against Palace and then chuck them straight back in against Madrid? Or do you need to manage it a bit better, do you think?
I think with all the information that I have, with no possibility of watching the training sessions and have no info of their physical state, I think they have to play both games the most minutes possible. If City are able to manage Palace in the first half and, I don't know, 2-3-0, I don't think that's going to happen. But if it does, I would rest them in the second half. But yeah, they have to start full on against Madrid because they will be essential.
Yeah. What about Grealish, Fred? Because did you get the sense that he was back at it against Villa how key is he to controlling the tempo in the game, especially at Madrid?
He is fundamental for what Guardiola wants to do against Madrid over there. And especially in those games, he needs to play. And it's very welcoming for City that he is getting back at it. Even Pep said last night, like, I can feel his back, not only physically, but mentally as well and focus-wise. So, yeah, City need him because they can't afford to lose too many balls and to allow the counter-attacks that Madrid love.
Yeah. Do you think, Adam, one of the reasons for the performance against Villa was the fact that Grealish was there?
Yeah, I think he was always on. The switchover was always... And I think that always allows a bit more of a fluid approach because you've got that out on the far side. But I think it's interesting that Doku and Grealish are playing at the same time now, because previously you'd think it would have to be one or the other. So I think with him having so much width in the game last night, it just showed how much he can impact a game. He had the beating of his man at times as well, and I think he's going to wind Madrid up if he plays there. I think he's going to draw fouls, he's going to kill the game, kill any momentum that they might have. You know, you can give the ball to Grealish and he's going to very rarely give it away, and that's exactly what he's in the team for. He'll get you up the pitch, he'll hold your position wherever you are on the pitch. He doesn't shirk away from challenges, he doesn't go missing, and on these big stages they're the type of players you need who are going to dictate where the ball's going to be held up, how involved they're going to be in games, and he's quite happy to play that role, it seems. So first name on the team sheet for me. I don't even think Grealish needs to be at it in terms of playing a ball retention role. I think if you're asking Grealish to create things and go in behind, then you need the best version of Grealish to achieve both aspects of the game. But if you need someone who's going to keep the ball in difficult places, at difficult arenas, in difficult moments, Grealish is the man you'd want on the pitch, regardless of what he's creating. Just draw fouls, keep us in the game, and that's exactly what our game plan should be. Yes, we're good enough to tear Madrid apart, but you don't need to win it in the first leg. You need to not lose it in the first leg, and that's exactly the type of player and play approach he allows you.
Yeah, I asked Fred before, so I'll ask you as well. Given how City have been doing this season, do you see this one? Do you see City able to put in the sort of performance at Madrid that they did last year, or is it closer to the one the year before when it was the last minute madness and they were trying to control it that way and ultimately failed?
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like we've got a softer underbelly than we did last year, but I'm hoping that we're in this end run click that we started talking about at the beginning of the show, where if it's that team, we're more than capable of being 2-0 up at half time again. I think we've got both sides of the game in our locker. It's just the application to get there. I think we're just a little notch off last year's, and it'll be more like the year before, but we're absolutely capable of last year still.
Yeah, but even if it is a bit more like the year before, they are going away first still.
Yeah, but in terms of the away game getting away from us and not having anything to bring back?
Because it's a case, again, getting back to Manchester, like Fred was saying before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. I think it'll be more like last year in terms of keeping in the game, and we'll back ourselves at home. I think that's how the league campaign's going as well. Yeah. I think there's a lot of backing ourselves in this next 2 months, and I think that'll be a snapshot of that approach as well.
But to be fair, I do think City played better in the madness of the Rodrigo goals than last year. They dominated more the game, but that's football.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, basically what we've just discovered over the last 20 minutes or so is that we don't really know what's going to happen, and don't back us for anything, which brings us neatly onto the charity bet. So, like, good luck, everyone. We didn't have any winners on last week's podcast, which means that we're still on £1,040 raised so far. William Hill has given us 3 £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They're helping Manchester Central Food Bank provide for the people most in need in Manchester. 2 chances to add to the kitty for the season this week. We're starting with the trip to Palace. I've gone for a 2-0 City win. That's 6-1 and £60. Adam, what are you having?
I'm going for a 1-0 smash and grab.
1-0 smash and grab is 7-1 and £70. Fred, please tell us it'll be easier than that.
3-1, so you can relax, guys.
3-1 is 11-1 and £110 if Fred is right. That brings us to Real Madrid. I've gone for 1-1, which is 6-1 and £60. Fred, what are you having?
Sorry, but I think Madrid will win this game. 2-1, which should be reversible in Manchester.
I don't think 2-1 is a terrible result at the Bernabeu, to be perfectly honest with you. If it happens, 10-1 and £100. Adam, what are you having?
I'm going for a carbon copy of the Arsenal game, 0-0, but we'll be playing the Arsenal role on this one.
0-0 is 14-1 and £140 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. We will squeeze in a couple of listener questions now to finish. At Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter, you can email through the website bluemoonpodcast.com. That is what Isaac has done. He says, just a question on Doku. I thought he was good on Wednesday night and it was good to see him get an assist, but it's undeniable that his numbers haven't been great this season after a very good start. The majority of his assists came in that one game against Bournemouth, and he's not scored since January against Huddersfield. Where do you see his development going in the next few seasons under Guardiola? And I think it's important to say, Fred, that it's a first season thing for Doku as well. His numbers might not be great for a winger at this stage of the season, but at the same time, they may be all right for someone who's in their first season under Pep. I don't know.
I think so. And I don't know, we shouldn't reduce players to assists and goals. Like, Doku goes beyond that. Like, as a Brazilian, stereotypical Brazilian, I like a bit of flair, and he gives me that. Like, he's a good dribbler. He brings a bit of chaos, which is not great sometimes for the chaos control that Pep tries to bring to the game. But yeah, he'll definitely develop into someone a bit more... he would give more assists, score more goals. Like, the assist he gave against Villa was something that probably he wouldn't give in the beginning of the season, so that shows development. I just hope he doesn't become a boring touchline hugger.
Yeah, Adam, for fans, it's interesting watching the kind of the difference in styles in the wingers, because we've talked about Grealish already against Villa, and then you've got Doku on the other flank, who is, like Fred says, a lot more unpredictable.
Yeah, and I think I always go back to the second season under Pep for everyone. Bernardo Silva needed it, Rodri needed it, Mahrez needed it, whereas Doku, because he's been a direct replacement for Mahrez and Palmer, if you want to say that, he needs to create now. So he's under more pressure than any. He's not being afforded the second season luxury, because we need output from him now. And I think that's what he's guilty of, just by proxy of the position he finds himself in within the squad. But he gets me off my seat, and I pay money to be entertained. I know what I'm getting watching Pep football, and it's not. That's why all the other rival fans call us boring. But I can see what Pep's trying to achieve. I think Doku's a perfect mix between attacking football and Pep's football. And once we find that balance, I think we've got a real player. So as a football fan and a City fan, I like Doku being in the side. He's equally as frustrating as he is mesmerising. So I think you're going to get 50-50 out of him. One day he's going to beat 10 men and do nothing with it. The other time he's going to do it, and then there's going to be end product. That's not enough in a title running, by the way. That's not enough when you need to go to beat teams like Madrid and stay in games and things like that. So I think it's such a weird one with Doku, because he's not a typical City player, but I like having him in the squad.
Yeah, how much more does he need to do, Fred? Because he keeps getting himself into these good positions, and then it's almost a case of, like, it just needs that final pass to click. He just needs to find somebody in the box once he's got into that position, doesn't he?
Yeah, he needs to be quicker after the dribble, because he can pass on players like he is, brushing his teeth, but he needs to be quicker after the first or the second dribble. Once he gets that timing, that tempo, he will become brilliant.
Yeah. Here's one for you to finish now, Fred, because you've mentioned him already. Paul Simmons on the emails says, is Manuel Akanji the most underrated player in the squad at the moment?
That is a good question / statement. I don't know if Ake is above.
Oh, that's a good, that is a good shout, yeah.
I think Ake is just extremely the reliant guy.
Yeah, I was going to say Akanji is more reliable than Ake. But Ake has been awesome when he's come in. But I think in terms of availability, I think Akanji is more reliable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think Ake is just like that guy that you know he'll always be give you a number 7, number 8 kind of performance. Apart from the, I don't know, what was a game that he messed up a bit? That was the only off moment from him this season.
Wolves away, Neto tore him a new one on the far side.
Yeah, that was it.
But yeah, I think Ake's always just a little slight hamstring twinge away from having a couple of games out of the side, where I think Akanji deserves some credit for how reliable and Mr. Dependable he has become recently for us. I think he can get overlooked because he wasn't a £70 million prize tag.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. Right, well, that brings us to an end for this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests for this one, Adam Carter.
Pleasure.
And Fred Caldera.
Even bigger pleasure.
I tell you what, fight it out amongst yourselves to find out who actually enjoyed it the most. I'll be back next week to discuss the Palace and Madrid games, plus look ahead to Luton. There's a clip of this week's nostalgia episode coming up. You can listen in full to that by joining our Patreon. See you next time.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Hearing that commentary now again, it moves me a lot. And that phrase, it's dick off again. And then you hear, it was just 40,000 souls being released from this purgatory. I was almost contemptuous of Horlock's goal. I was thinking, don't you dare give me hope when you failed so catastrophically on this with this opportunity, and we've been with you through all this season. Don't give me a sense of hope by pulling one back and we all get up off our seats. And I did feel that. Now, I did celebrate Horlock's goal. It goes up and Taylor nods it on. It falls to Goto. He doesn't quite make a connection. And then it falls to Dickoff. And I've watched that goal so many times. And what I always notice is that the Gillingham keeper could have saved it. And he pulls his hand away thinking it's going to go over.
Yeah.
So it haunts me that what would have happened. Because we'd have got a corner. And I think, you know what I mean?
Nothing had happened from there, yeah.
Yeah, it it seemed to take an eternity for it to go in. And then I've never heard a sound like it.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.